Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, live in LA, hour two. It's the Herd in a Tuesday. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. It is summer. It is mid-July. In about a month from now, 3 weeks from now, we're going to go head first into football. Now, tonight, Fox Baseball All-Star Game. Listen, these All-Star Games, outside of the Baseball All-Star Game, are all awful. The Pro Bowl's unwatchable. I've never seen the hockey one. The NBA All-Star Game, the three-point shooting and dunk contest sometimes overshadows the game. The baseball one's actually good. You're just not going to see some of these matchups, especially the first three or four innings. It's the world's best players. The players are into it. They're having fun. And it, to me, as a kid, this was the All-Star Game that has... Listen, it's like every other industry in America, Joy, is that when we had COVID, a lot of restaurants went out of business. The best car rental companies and airlines flourished, right? And some others shrink and are not going to make it. Over the course of time, weakness is devoured. And most of these All-Star games are awful, except baseball. It has always been the best All-Star game.
But it's also been built to matter. So...
And you know something? Baseball is a lot of individual battles. So even if a player doesn't care who wins tonight, Shohei Ohtani wants to jack one out against a pitcher from, you know, he'll never face the rest of the year. So these individual, baseball is built to matter in an all-star format. Star pitcher, star hitter, everybody's watching, everybody's talking about it. So, you know, we all know that in America, you know, small businesses are challenged to beat the Facebooks and the Yahoos and the Googles and whatever. But it's the same thing in sports, is the strong are surviving. And the All-Star games have all sort of either evaporated or lost their way. And the baseball All-Star game continues to be head and shoulders above everything else. John Smoltz next hour. I want to talk about this. A lot of times, Joy and I will talk to a high school class, or we'll go to a college class, or a broadcasting school, whatever, and we do a couple of these, one or two a year, and, you know, people ask, and you do them, and they're fun, you talk to kids. And a lot of times, I'll talk to, like, the parents of kids. People come up to me all the time, oh, my son wants to be a sportscaster, my daughter wants to be a sportscaster, could you give them advice? And I'm always very reluctant, very reticent to give advice, and here's why. There's no one way to do it. What worked for me may not work for you. I could be sending your daughter's son down a goofy path. I came from a small town. I didn't go to a great broadcasting school. We didn't have a lot of money. I ended up doing baseball play-by-play in Vegas. My car caught on fire. I had no money. I just kept my head down, and 30 years later, here I am. So it's the same in sports. We always think, and you know, parents out there, if you've got a good... let's say your son's a quarterback, right? And you think to yourself, okay, I got to send him to this camp. He's got to be this way. He's got to have this coach, and he's got to go to this school. Well, how many Alabama quarterbacks are rocking in the NFL? How many Ohio State quarterbacks? Yeah, not many. Here's a list. The NFL executives, coaches, and players voted on the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, and it's fascinating. And it proves there is no one path to success. This is the highest paid position in America's most popular sport. Patrick Mahomes went to Texas Tech and had a losing record in college. Number two is Aaron Rodgers. Nobody offered him. He went to a junior college, then transferred to non-traditional power Cal. Also dropped in the first round. Tom Brady struggled to start in college, 6th-round pick. Number four is Russell Wilson. He started as a freshman at North Carolina State and as a sophomore and as a junior, and then his coach said, you're not as good as Mike Glennon. He had to transfer to Wisconsin. Number five is Josh Allen. He was not offered by a single Power 5 school. He went to Wyoming. We'll skip to number 7, Dak Prescott, who does not have an elite throwing motion. His coach, Dan Mullen, came on our show and said, I like the kid. I hated the way he threw a football. He went to Mississippi State in the 4th round. Number 8 is Lamar Jackson, still has his critics. I'm no longer one of them. He went to a basketball school, Louisville, almost dropped out of the 1st round. Justin Herbert's number 9. He was the 3rd quarterback taken. We called him too stiff to make it in this league. And Kyler Murray initially liked baseball, and he had to transfer too. He had to transfer. Only Matt Stafford at number 6 had a linear path. He was number 1 high school player near Dallas. He was number 1 college guy at Georgia. He went to a big power. And number 1 pick in the NFL. And has gotten his brains beat in and can't win in the NFL. Hopefully that changes for the Rams. He had the best path, right? The clear path. Great high school program, great college program, goes to the NFL, and he has the second worst winning, well, he actually has the worst winning percentage of all these quarterbacks who have played for more than like 2 years. Justin Herbert, Kyler Murray, you can't really, you know, we're not talking about their winning percentage, their kids. So Matt Stafford, that's what most parents think you have to do. My kid's got to be a great high schooler, he's got to go to a great college, he's got to go number 1. Hey, nonsense. There's one guy in the league, and he can't win any games, and hopefully in LA he does now because he has support. There, we have a quarterback in this top 10 that went to a junior college. 2 had to transfer. Some are fast. Some aren't. Brady isn't. Lamar is. Some are tall, Josh Allen. Some are short, Kyler Murray. Patrick Mahomes had a losing record in college. Nobody talked about Patrick Mahomes, and I love college football, and I didn't watch him play in college. I mean, I saw his highlights. I didn't watch Texas Tech games. They weren't any good. So it's a great example that it doesn't have to be one way. When you ask advice, there is no one way. The quarterback is the highest paid position, the most important position in America's overwhelmingly number one sport. And Aaron Rodgers went to a junior college, and nobody thought Josh Allen was worth a scholarship even to Oregon State. And Tom Brady couldn't start in college, and Russell Wilson's college coach didn't think he was as good as Mike Glennon. And Dak Prescott doesn't throw a perfect football, and Dan Mullen admitted, I didn't like the way he threw. I really didn't, but I just liked the kid. That's why football's great. It's a story of America. The most important position, Joy and I have said this, half the NFL, half, is undrafted. That is utterly remarkable. Half the NFL is undrafted. There is no one way to success. If you're a young person watching my show and you're a man and a woman and you don't have a lot of money and you can't afford the good camps and you don't get the private tutors, nonsense. It doesn't matter. Head down, work hard, believe in yourself. You will get there. Don't listen to anybody. There is no one way to be successful. And I love all these guys on that list. It just jumped out to me. I'm like, good God, outside of Stafford, they all had goofy paths. There is no one way. I mean, look at that list. 3rd-round guy, 6th-round guy, 4th-round guy, junior college guy. 2 guys had to transfer. 1's 5'9", 1's 6'6".
I bet if we looked back over the years, too, this would be consistent over time as well.
Yeah, I mean, Phil Simms went to a college. I grew up with Jim Zorn, as a Seahawk fan as a kid, I don't know where he went to school. I think it was like Cal San Luis Obispo. He's a left-hander. There were no left-handed quarterbacks. And then I got Dave Craig, and I think he went to a college that's now defunct.
I mean, Terry Bradshaw, Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, we could just continue to go down the list.
There was a time, Joy, that North Carolina State had 3 starting quarterbacks in the NFL, and Ohio State and Alabama combined had 0. North Carolina State had 3. They had Phillip Rivers, Russell Wilson, and I think Glennon. They had 3 quarterbacks at one point starting in the NFL, and all the powers had none. USC also didn't have one.
I think now with scouting and especially with social media, there's so many more ways to get yourself out there.
Yes.
And they do pay attention to these, you know, these videos and
I was talking to my daughter
reels that these guys put out
about some TikTok star, and I'm like, who's she? And she's like, oh, she's from Connecticut, where we used to live, and she's a dancer, and she's a big TikTok star. And I'm like, how big? She's like, the biggest in the world. And I'm like, who's she? No, she's a dancer. Just a kid from Connecticut. She's the number 1 TikTok star. She's a dancer. I forget her name, but she's like a big deal. And it's like, okay, that's the world we live in. If you got talent, people will find you. Well, we're going to bring in Buddy Hield, Sacramento Kings guard. One of our topics today has been, don't be shocked if Team USA doesn't blow all these teams out. There is so much global talent. Our MVP is from Serbia. The runner-up, Joel Embiid, is from Cameroon. The defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert, is from France. The best young player is probably Luka. He's from Slovenia. This is the world we live in now. There's so much talent. And Buddy Hield, 5 years in the NBA with the Kings, one with the Pelicans, 6th overall pick. He is from the Bahamas. And I think many of you have seen his story, and he is now joining us live. Born and raised in Freeport, Bahamas. You know, it's funny. You know, Buddy, we're talking about this morning, that American fans sometimes go, how do we not beat Nigeria? And I think to myself, time out. There's a lot of talent out there. You are one of, you know, a couple dozen guys who didn't grow up in your, you know, your classic situation here in America. When you were in the Bahamas, Buddy, did you think to yourself, man, I'm nobody from the Bahamas is in the NBA. I got, you know, there's Tim Duncan, I think, you know, were you ever worried that you wouldn't be watched or given an opportunity?
Yes, sir, for sure. No doubt. But I know I had to go get my name out there and get to America because, you know, America is close to the Bahamas. So I had to find a way to get my name out there. And I wanted to come to the United States and play basketball to pursue my dreams.
And you were a two-time Big 12 Player of the Year. Do you think your path, Buddy, was harder because, you know, in America, you may have all the coaching and the facilities and the financial support. When you were going through you're 9 years old, you're 10, you're 11, you're 12, 13. I mean, was it harder when you look back at it now?
Yes, sir, it was harder. And but the grind is much appreciated, though, because of all the work I've put it in. You know, all the time I was spent on the outside court, you know, it's worth it to be here and at this moment, and especially being in the NBA at the highest level.
You know, Buddy, what's interesting is you almost never miss a game. I mean, I think you've missed three in your career. And part of me thinks to myself, you probably got, you're a strong kid. But is some of that because maybe you're from the Bahamas, you've had to work so hard that you're not going to take games off. You are going to play hurt. Is some of that psychological that you just refuse to get off the court?
For sure. I refuse. I'm not going to, if I can play, I'm going to play. And if I'm hurt, I'm still going to play. If I got to be injured, not to play. And like you said, psychologically, like every opportunity I get to go on the basketball court, if I can go out there and give my all, even if I'm a little banged up, I'm going to go out there. I'm not going to take no days off.
You have also done things giving back to young kids in the Bahamas. You have the Buddy Buckets, a program that helps young kids, AAU teams. When we were talking about earlier today how many great players there are around the world, do you see more talent in a place like the Bahamas when you go back and see kids?
Yes, sir. Yes, there's a lot of talent there, and I just feel like the kids just need the opportunity to get exposed. And like you see guys like DeAndre Ayton, he's doing great in the finals. You know, another guy in the draft, Kai Jones from the Bahamas. You know, I'm just trying to give these kids opportunity to showcase their talent, and because we don't get the much exposure we need. And hopefully everybody can be able to see that the Bahamas is on the rise. And, you know, maybe next year, hopefully we can put a team together to compete for the Olympics.
You know what? Olympics. You were the fastest player to get to 1,000 made three-pointers. You beat Steph Curry on that. Take me back when you're coming from the Bahamas in Oklahoma. You got some scholarship offers. Do you remember the first team in the States that offered you a college scholarship? Do you remember the moment if you were with your parents or do you remember the day that you got a call and somebody said, Buddy, come to college in America. We're going to give you a scholarship.
Yeah, yes, sir. I remember that. I think it was Wichita State University. I went to school in Wichita State in Kansas, high school, Sunrise Christian Academy. And I'm Greg Marshall in the gym, and he's like, I want to give you a scholarship. And I said, I appreciate you, but I was not going to take it because I had bigger dreams. I went to play big-time basketball at a five-star, at a Power 5 conference. So, Greg Marshall was the first guy to offer me a scholarship.
So you played with Drew Holiday. He's now in the finals against the Phoenix Suns and Chris Paul. And I want to talk about this. You've had to face Chris Paul. You've faced Drew Holiday. Are you surprised how Chris Paul has completely turned around the Suns in 1 year? Are you surprised?
You know, Chris Paul has always been a leader. You know, just him on the court, he's always vocal. He's always have his team engaged. And he's competitive, man. He's savvy. And he's being, you know, like I say, every time I play him, you hear his mouth more than anybody, more than the coaches. And he's always communicating with the refs, his teammates, and the coaching staff. And he's like a coach out there, so no surprise to see him where he's at right now.
How about Drew Holiday, who's a bigger, stronger guard? What is he like to face?
You know, I first of all, when I got drafted in New Orleans, you know, I didn't really know nothing about Drew. But because especially how he's been out with his wife. But then after that, he's become a big brother for me when he came back. And just being around him, you know, I look at him as a mentor and as the way he just handled himself on and off the basketball court. It doesn't surprise me to see where he's at and his success, what he has going for him right now.
Are you surprised, having played for Sacramento 5 years and Pelicans, are you surprised Phoenix made the finals? They were, buddy, most of your career in the league, they were not good at all. They were terrible. Are you shocked they're here?
You know, after the bubble, they turned around, and I think Monty did a great job with them. You know, the bubble, they went 8-0, I think. And, you could sense there was a new direction and new spirit was going in their direction and the movement they had. So, I was surprised to see in the finals, but having a guy like Chris Paul, who's savvy and who's a leader and veteran, and I had a guy like Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, the way he's been playing on the boards and offensively for them and defensively for them has been great.
Well, Buddy's Buckets, it's called Buddy's Buckets, a program that helps young kids from the Bahamas. He's put together two AAU teams this summer to compete and get exposure. He is giving back to the global game. And, Buddy, I love guys that do that, and I want to thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you, man. Have a good one.
All right, Buddy Hield, Sacramento and the Pelicans. Buddy's Buckets is his program. His story is pretty. You can YouTube a lot of his story. Didn't grow up with a lot, right? But he's a classic example. He becomes a star. He goes to the NBA. Kids in the Bahamas watch him. That could be me. He goes back and gives money. Now he's got AAU teams. That's the process. And in the NBA, that's been going on now for 40, 45 years. And the result is we got all these awards this year in the NBA go to international players. And the winner is us. No loser in this. The winner is us.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tonight, Judge Tatis Otani and baseball's finest face off in a mile-high midsummer slugfest from Coors Field in Denver. It's the 2021 MLB All-Star Game presented by MasterCard tonight at 7 Eastern on Fox.
There's Shohei Ohtani behind me, Fernando Tatis, who is a remarkable player, who's good at everything except, they say, defense. It's like defense in the NBA. There's a reason Steph Curry made more than Ben Wallace. This stuff's about offense. We can't worry about a guy occasionally bobbles a ground ball. Come on. Nobody's going to baseball games to watch the best defensive teams. What baseball needs is marketing and stars and flair and hits and running and stealing and that's what the All-Star Game on Fox is about tonight. It's not the best defensive players all the time. I got nothing against defense.
Defense wins championships.
No, defense doesn't win. That's a great point. Defense no longer wins championships because, and this is very obvious, the leagues make their money on television networks. It used to be that a league made money on Joey and I putting our butts in seats and drinking beers and parking our cars and buying a program. You're much more valuable as a television consumer. It's not that they don't care. They want you in the stadium. NBA owners want $16,000 a night. But the big money is in the television contracts, and I'm worth more to a network as a viewer than I am sitting in your arena. And so the reality is, how do I elevate my television ratings so I can go to networks? And NBA is trying to triple their revenue in their next contract up in 2 or 3 years. Triple it. How? Scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Shoe deals, scoring. Ben Wallace, a great player, Hall of Famer. He's not getting big shoe deals.
NFL, too. All of the new rules pretty much cater to the offense.
Yeah. Nothing against Khalil Mack. We're not watching television for Khalil Mack. He's just a great player. So
that said,
to tease everybody,
you could really argue that the Bucks defense is the reason why they won.
Well, was. I would argue the Bucks defense was good the year before, but until Tom Brady brought it all together. So in the end, when I hear people say Tatis not much of a defensive player, nobody can. He is filling stadiums. He is selling merch because of the offense, and that's okay. It's funny. We don't ask all of our NBA stars. Steph Curry doesn't play defense. We don't ask them. In the NFL, they don't even go to that side of the locker room at half. But in baseball, guys will get chippy, like not a great defensive player. In the end, that's not going to – the bottom line, if I ran a baseball team, give me dynamic offensive performers in all sports. Patrick Kane, Chicago Blackhawks. I still don't know if he was a good defender at all. Messi, Ronaldo. I don't know if they're good. I don't know if they can defend. All I know is they put the ball in the net, and that's what I care about. And that's why we all watch games. It's not for scooping up ground balls. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, another great offensive player is Damian Lillard. And there's been some rumors swirling about his unhappiness in Portland. And many teams have decided to take the where there's smoke, there's fire approach to discuss potential trade deals for Dame. And one of those teams is Golden State, according to Anthony Slater of The Athletic. He said, would the Warriors get involved? Yes, they'd make a call and have already internally discussed the idea, as I'm sure most contenders have, considering the rise of smoke out of Portland. If the Blazers decide to trade Lillard, a complete rebuild seems like the wisest path. And there are many better rebuilding trade packages dangling out there right now. So the proposed package would be James Wiseman, the 7th and the 14th pick in the upcoming draft, including future first attached to Andrew Wiggins as a salary match filler.
No. Now, there's no way I'm going to have Dame, Steph, and Klay Thompson come back into my building and literally humiliate us. Now, I would do it for Klay Thompson.
No, that's not going to happen. There's no way the Warriors give up Klay Thompson.
Well, there's absolutely no way I'm going to have Dame, Steph, and Klay come into my building.
No.
And I get Andrew Wiggins and some kid from Creighton. I'm not doing it.
If the Warriors were in the East and Dame asked out, because Dame is the one who has to pull the trigger on all of this. If Dame says, I want to be traded, and the Warriors were in the East, to their point, that this is probably the best trade package you're going to get. You're getting the 7th and the 14th pick, future first, and two players.
I'm not giving you a superstar and getting Andrew Wiggins and college guys. Now, if you give me both lottery picks and Klay, I'll do it.
By the way, you could argue Klay is coming off of two injuries. I mean, I think Klay is going to be fine.
But at least I feel like I get a shooter. I got CJ McCollum. I've got two lottery picks. I'll be better defensively. Like, I think Klay is going to be fine. I think his body, he'll be fine. But there's no way, especially in the West.
I mean, they just can't do it because it's in the West. I agree with you there.
No way I can.
But if they were in the East, this is a nice package for Dame if he wanted out. Now, they've said that he's not available, and Dame has not said that he's denied asking to be traded. So this is just more of they are perennially disappointing. Dame is a superstar. He's in his prime. How much longer is he going to continue to end the season in disappointments? And it's not like Portland's a dysfunctional place. It's not, but they need other pieces. And there's not that many superstars available. He's entering the first year of a four-year deal and a contract extension, so he won't be an unrestricted free agent until 2025. So he is the one who would have to make this begin. So Ben Simmons has been a hot topic of trade conversation, and it's definitely going to continue to get hotter. Charles Barkley has never been one to hold back. Doesn't think that Ben Simmons is a hot commodity.
They got a serious issue on their hand with this Ben Simmons situation. Because I know Philly's a very difficult town when things aren't going good. And, you know, I hear all these fans talk about we got to trade Ben Simmons. But after watching him play, and I know he's making $30, $40 million a year, what team, and he's afraid to shoot the ball, what team wants to trade for that situation?
There was a report this morning from Shams Charania that the Sixers have opened up trade conversations regarding Simmons and have engaged with teams.
I think Golden State works. They've got two elite shooters. They could use size. Wiseman doesn't fit. I think he works for Golden State. And I think, by the way, I think those lottery picks and an Andrew Wiggins works for Philadelphia.
Here's what I'll say about Ben Simmons. And we were just talking about this a few moments ago with Tatis. Stop trying to make players into what they're not. We have more than enough tape on Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
You know what he is as a player. You know what he is as a person. You know what his work ethic is. There's no secrets about Ben Simmons at this point in his NBA career. He's not a rookie. He's not in his second year. You have enough to evaluate him to see if he fits with your team, organization, your culture. Stop it. He's not a shooter.
Yeah.
Let it go. Let it go. It's done. Like, this is what he is. Do you know what Ben Simmons is? He's a great player and an elite defender.
Yeah.
He is elite at something. That has extreme value. There are very few people on the planet Earth that are elite at something, and he is an elite defender.
And the Warriors also, because Wiseman's a weird fit, you could post Ben, and Ben would be good near the hoop and getting the ball to people. So Ben plays defense, great distributor, and if you get him the ball within 5 feet of the basket, he's a tough matchup for a lot of players because he's very clever and he's very long. He just, you know, when the Bucks try to make Giannis a shooter, it looks really ugly. Against the Suns, when they pound it low, they can't stop him. Like, this is the thing. LeBron James came into football, and now the sense is everybody can do everything. And the truth is, even great players mostly do one thing well. Like, Magic Johnson is about the second or third best player I've seen. Never an elite defender. Never really an elite shooter. That's not, Magic was the greatest passer I've seen, the greatest point guard. He was a great scorer, but not a great shooter. And that's Magic.
Essentially, every player has something about their game that you can pick at.
Everybody.
Except LeBron. And now LeBron is getting to the end of his, looking at the end of his career. And so you can start talking about injuries, which you've never talked about in his entire career.
Yeah.
So only now have we just begun to talk about something. In the beginning of his career, he develops a few things, but he's always been LeBron who can do everything.
Yeah.
Stop trying to make people LeBron. There's only one LeBron. That's it. So stop it. Ben Simmons has extreme value. You just have to get him in the right situation. And to your point about Golden State, they have elite shooters. So we've always said, what does he need? Shooters. That's what Golden State has.
That's right.
Just stop it with Ben Simmons. He's going to be fine. He just needs to be in the right situation. Philadelphia is not it. And finally, Philadelphia has recognized that, and that's fine. So Team USA has lost its second exhibition game last night, falling to Australia 91-83. I admittedly didn't watch the whole game, but I did see the end of it, and it was
ugly.
I think messy is the way that I want to describe it. But following the loss, Greg Popovich got very testy with the reporters.
Very testy.
You know, you asked the same sort of question, the same family of question last time, where you assume things that are not true. When you just mentioned, you know, blowing these teams out, that's never happened. So I don't know where you get that. So, can I finish? Can I finish? Are you going to let me finish my statement or not? So you'll be quiet now while I talk, and then I'll listen to you.
Oh, Popovich. Listen, it's called Google. You should be beating these teams. Let's move past that.
I would agree with him on the point that it does feel a little disrespectful to the other teams to assume that we should be blowing everybody out by 50 points. So I'm with him there. In general, you know how Popovich is. You know he's going to respond to the reporters. So that's what he does. And we have all accepted that this is what he does and that it's appropriate or whatever. But I don't want to overreact to it. It is exhibition games in Vegas. But I do think it's something.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Chris Broussard, it's a weird team. So you got Bradley Beal. Is he really focused? He's part of trade rumors. Dame's part of trade rumors. KD's a talent. He's not necessarily a natural leader. You don't really have a rim protector. And so it's thrown together. A lot of guys didn't want to play. You're asking them to figure out how to play together. It's a it's a weird team. I mean, we all know that if it was a perfect team, you'd have like a Chris Paul or a Steph as your lead. Then you'd have a secondary guard who could defend a little. That would be your Bradley Beal. Then you'd, I mean, you, a classic team, you'd have a rim protector. A lot of this stuff they just don't have. And so what it looks like is talented guys at the Y who haven't played together much getting really sloppy. And by the way, their defense was lousy last night too. They're not... You could cut on this team.
It was very sloppy. I mean, listen, Australia was sloppy too. It was not the best basketball I've ever watched.
Yeah.
But I think they'll still be favored. I just think they need a little more time together, and this is how it goes. Their next exhibition game is today at 6 Eastern against Argentina. So we'll see how that goes.
Now Argentina's pretty good.
Well, I also think you've made a good point earlier. The international talent is better than it's been in past years.
So
that, like, maybe that will make for more compelling games. Like, it's not all a bad thing. Like, obviously I want Team USA to win, but we also have to have the same passion level to win that these other countries do.
Yeah. I mean, you're sending our domestic product to Vegas. And I think they're half into it and half not.
I mean, you heard Luka's interview after they asked him what he'd want more. Like, he was like, I want a gold medal. Like, this is my country. I want to win a gold medal.
Yeah. In Slovenia, that would,
Yeah. He's like, I'll take both. I'll take an NBA championship and a gold medal. But, you know, we'll be all right.
We'll be all right. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, John Smoltz played for 22 years. He was an 8-time All-Star. He'll be on the broadcast tonight. Fox Sports has the only All-Star game that's frankly worth watching in America still. And John joins us from Colorado Live, beautiful Denver. So what was the best part about being an All-Star for you? What did you take from, because you were in so many big games through your career, what made these special?
Well, you couldn't wait to get there and represent your team. It was such an honor. And to play with some of the guys that you competed against, you felt like you checked into that extra league. And just rubbing elbows with the likes of those veteran players when I was a rookie and seeing how the whole thing transpires, it's kind of surreal. When you're young, you just can't wait to experience it. And then when you get a chance to do it multiple times, it never gets old. And I enjoyed every one of them. There's only one I couldn't compete in. I was hurt in my shoulder, and the one in San Francisco. But just being in the locker room with your peers and feeling like you've reached a level of, like checking in, right? Even if the guys that you're in the room with, you feel like you don't measure up with, for that moment, you're kind of on that team and you feel incredible.
Shohei Ohtani is throwing 100 miles an hour, and he's going to end up leading baseball perhaps in home runs. I'm not sure which he's better at. I think both are hard to do. I'm trying to think of the most talented baseball players I've ever seen. Dave Winfield always struck me as an insanely talented guy. Are you kind of blown away? Did you think he would be this good in the bigs?
No, there's no way you could predict this. As a matter of fact, I thought they kind of rushed both aspects of it. I really felt bad about his arm when he came in, and of course he had Tommy John, so now that he's recovered from it, he hasn't gotten the reps on the mound to even give the universe an opportunity to see how good of a pitcher he is. The hitting aspect is just something phenomenal. If you'd have told me that he would end up with 33 home runs for the year, I'd say pencil in MVP. Give him the MVP right now. That's how great of a year he's having. It's only the first half. I know we are in an era where there's a ton of home runs. And proportionally, Babe Ruth hit way more home runs proportionally than the league did as opposed to Ohtani. But what Ohtani is doing, you just can't comprehend. As a pitcher my whole life, I had to spend the whole week trying to get ready for 5 days to pitch. He's spending the week sharing energy and trying to do both. It's just not possible to do this at the level he's doing it. And I tell people all the time, and I know they shake their head at me like I'm crazy, I'm telling you, if he never hit again and all he concentrated on pitching, he'd be the best pitcher in the American League, hands down. And I know that's a big time statement to say, but when you are a pitcher, you need about 90 to 100 starts to figure it out. He's what? Roughly a quarter of the way there. And he's having to share the duties with a high level, by the way, offensive attack that he puts on. So this is a talented as it gets. Maybe Bo Jackson, when he played baseball and football, the combination of power and speed. Deion Sanders, again, with the speed and playing two sports. This guy's playing one sport, but two different positions and making it look like it's no big deal.
Yeah, that's really well put. The world we live in now is a specialized world. You have a setup man and a middle guy. He's facing setup people and blowing through them. I mean, the idea, we say this all the time. Michael Jordan tried to play baseball. He couldn't. To do two things well is just unbelievable. By the way, the Mets, Pete Alonso, is he the best pure power hitter? Is he a throwback? What do you make of what he's doing?
Yeah, he's one of those guys that when you watch BP, you just can't take your eyes off of him. And I think he understood what he wanted to accomplish. I've never seen anybody more motivated, more locked in, more excited to do something that, you know, gives the fans a thrill. He is an absolute strong human being. And I think in a way you can make the argument that his claim is accurate, because what he did is just incredible. 35 home runs, and he was enjoying every swing. It felt like he could have kept going and hit, you know, well, he hit over 100. So I just loved his attitude, and I think he's got this mindset. Not only in the regular season is he going to hit a bunch of home runs, but I think he wants to come here and hold on to this for a while.
That's great. By the way, what do you make of the Yankees' first half? Do they turn it around?
I think they do. I'm one of maybe the few people that think they do. I know they've become one way in their right-handed power batting lineup with not much flexibility and maneuverable. The lineups just can get eaten up by right-handed relievers and starters. But here's what I think. I think their bullpen's got to get better and healthier. I think their offense is going to be much better than it is. And if they get any health in their rotation, the Yankees are built to slug people.
Yep.
And they're going to slug a little bit more than they have. Now, whether that's enough to catch the teams in front of them, I still think they've got a chance when they come out of the break. They play the Boston Red Sox a bunch of times. They play the Rays. They got teams in front of them that they can do something about. But there's no doubt, offensively, they hide more warts than they do, than any other team does. And if they don't hit and slug, then the answer is no.
By the way, National League West is tough. What do you make of the Giants? If you look at the Giants roster, you don't see a bunch of, you know, you don't see a bunch of names you recognize. And yet here are the Dodgers in a real battle with the Giants. My guess is the Dodgers just have, you know, there's so many games over the course of a season, they would wear you down. Your thoughts about them ending back in the series?
Yeah, I think the Dodgers have the best chance. They're the deepest team. They have, obviously, the experience. They weren't healthy most of the first half as far as their lineup construction. Their lineup's getting healthier and getting better. Their pitching is second to none. Look, the best story in baseball is the San Francisco Giants and the Boston Red Sox. I don't think anybody who knew a lot of baseball thought these two teams could compete this late and be this good. And you got to tip your hat to both organizations for not, you know, giving up on not only, you know, this is not a rebuild for San Francisco. This has been a resurgence. And I love the fact that when people tell you you're old or you have an old roster based on a computer output, I like the fact that the team has a little chip on their shoulder to show that they can get after a year healthy and they're not too old. So it's going to be a fun NL West. It looks like three teams could possibly go to the playoffs if they can continue, but there's going to be a lot of beating each other up there for at the top, and I still think the Dodgers have what it takes to win the division, but it's more than likely going to be three teams that come out of that division for the playoffs.
All right, fifth consecutive year you're doing the All-Star game. By the way, we got a minute left. Who was the greatest hitter you ever faced in an All-Star game?
Tony Gwynn. I mean, he was the greatest hitter I ever faced, period. And I would not want to face him with runners on. I just never want. I couldn't strike him out. Like, Glavin, myself, and Maddox, we struck him out three times and maybe 180 at-bats, something like that. It just wasn't fair.
John's great seeing you again, my man. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Oh, Tony Gwynn. Tony Gwynn's the first person I ever interviewed.
What?
Yep, Tony Gwynn. A spring trainer, one of the nicest, gentlest, sweetest athletes of all time. I was a young, I just gotten out of college. I got a job with the Las Vegas Stars. We were the AAA affiliate of the Padres. And I went to spring training. The owner, the late Larry Kentop, was the owner. He was kind enough to take me to spring training. I'd never been to a spring training. I'm a small-town kid. So I went to a spring training. He took a couple of us in the organization, and I got an interview with the great Tony Gwynn.
That's wild.
He was incredibly patient with me. Everybody needed to be at that point. I asked probably inane questions, and I was shaking as I interviewed with him. He could not have been sweeter. Here was the best hitter in baseball, who, by the way, was a great college basketball player. Tony Gwynn could have, I mean, a lot of people thought Tony could have played in the NBA, and Tony Gwynn patiently sat me down. He used to care that, you know, he liked to chew and spit and do that stuff, but he's the greatest pure hitter I've ever seen, too. I didn't see Ted Williams. Tony Gwynn's the greatest pure hitter I've ever seen.
That's a great first interview.
Yeah. Well, the interview wasn't great, but the subject was great. The interview wasn't. Hour 3 next.